Welcome to Call for to Connect, the podcast where a call can make all the difference in someone's life. I'm Kim Clyden, and each week we'll explore something beautifully simple but profoundly powerful, picking up the phone and calling four or more people. Four real conversations, four chances to remind someone they matter. This movement was created by Charles and Tracy Alder, who've spent decades supporting Australians through fire, flood, drought, and just as devastating, silence. Because loneliness isn't just a feeling. It's a quiet crisis, chipping away at our mental health, fueling anxiety and depression, making people feel like they don't belong. Left unchecked, it can become life-threatening. Together, we can break the cycle of isolation, remind our friends and loved ones they're seen, valued, and never alone. In each episode, we'll hear stories from people making connection a habit. Community leaders, everyday Aussies, and voices from around the world who are proving that something small can have a massive impact. In this episode, as we look back on 2025, one word has surfaced again and again in conversations around the world: loneliness. It's being called an epidemic, affecting people of all ages, from young adults navigating disconnection in a digital world to older generations facing isolation later in life. Whilst COVID-19 intensified these experiences, loneliness was already present long before 2020. So the question becomes, what can we do about it? In July this year, my guest Charles Alder decided to take action, drawing on his background in digital marketing and community support. Charles created Call for, a simple but powerful platform that invites people to register four or more names and receive gentle reminders to reach out. No algorithms, no pressure, just intentional human connection. In August, the Call for to Connect podcast was born. Hello, Charles. You had this idea earlier in the year about how you might be able to influence loneliness for people in relation to connecting them with others. And we launched this podcast with that intention in mind. Looking back at that now, what have you achieved and how do you feel about this movement and the feedback you've had?
The issue, I think, is even bigger than I thought it was. Even though I was aware of the issue, the diversity of challenges that people are facing around the world in relation to loneliness and the disparate age issues, you know, the loneliness of young people to the loneliness of professionals, the loneliness of mothers, the loneliness of seniors. I think it's such a profound issue, far greater than I thought it was originally. But I'm really happy that more people around the world are actually talking about the issue. And I think there's some greater opportunities for collaboration around the issue as well.
We've spoken to quite a few people on the podcast about their experiences and how loneliness has affected them or how they help people overcome loneliness. Were there any standouts for you this year?
I think I was particularly touched by Zoe Cox, the counsellor from Bathurst, because she deals with people in that counselling space. I think it was very grounded, the fact that she's got professional experience in talking to people about these particular issues, but then how she actually relayed her own personal loneliness issues around being a new mother, et cetera, I thought was really quite profound. I think the diversity of the people we've had on the podcast has been interesting as well, and the different types of loneliness that they've faced. And I've got a lot of older people around me at the moment. My mother and father are both 82 and I'm caring for an 86-year-old. I'm looking at loneliness through their eyes as well, being one of their primary carers, and just seeing how desperately lonely older people are and how they almost feel as if they're being neglected. It sort of makes me, in today's consciousness about this issue, I sort of wonder, what did people do 40 or 50 years ago? Because they didn't have the internet to engage them, or they didn't have many books, or they didn't have as much music or as much access to activities. as we do today. So how did they deal with loneliness 50 years ago, which is something I want to do a lot more of understanding in 2026?
Rayleigh Huggett actually spoke to that very topic you just mentioned, which is aged care and the loneliness amongst elderly people, not just here in Australia, but all over the world. And it was interesting to hear from her, you know, some of those solutions. So how do you think we can all contribute to the solutions that we've already established around how we fix loneliness for people?
Well, I think firstly, we've got to become aware that it's actually an issue and that there are some relatively simple solutions. And I hope that the Call 4 project about the simplicity of picking up the telephone and actually just calling people. And I've actually now got into the habit of saying, you know, when you and I talk on the phone, I say, it's nice to hear your voice. I'm actually using that term of phrase instead of g'day, how are you? Because I think it's actually important to hear people's voices. And I'm actually thanking people for actually making the effort to actually call up. Yes, you can giggle, Kim, but, you know, I think it's a really connecting piece.
The reason I'm giggling is because you answered the phone the other day and you said, hello, this is Queensland Rail, and I thought I had the wrong number. So excuse me, I had to explain that for people so they don't think I'm actually quite callous.
No, not callous at all. Now, but I think it's, well, I have a lot of fun with that actually, because I think you can sort of put people off guard when you answer the phone in a different name or a different voice or a different accent or whatever it might be. But I think that there's more recognition of the fact that loneliness is an issue and the simple solutions about making the effort, picking up the telephone, calling people, sharing experiences, and just in general, just learning how to communicate better, which my wife reminds me all the time I need to do even more of. But I think sometimes I'm a great communicator, but she seems to think I can do better. But that's okay. That's her role.
Well, it's funny you brought this back to personal relationships because, especially through COVID, I found myself feeling very lonely, even though I'm married, a mother, Mimi to three grandchildren, and I have dogs and animals. So loneliness affects people in different ways at different stages and different reasons in their lives. How do you think we need to think about that from that perspective and then be motivated to actually, instead of just thinking about someone, gee, I haven't heard from them for a while, picking up the phone and reaching out so that it's more meaningful?
I suppose one of the issues, and you and I have been talking about this in some of our telephone conversations, is the advent of AI and the fact that it takes out the human interaction of learning. I think we actually are at a point where if we think loneliness is bad right now in terms of a social issue, that it could become even worse in the future because people are now talking to ChatGPT and they're getting, what should we have for dinner? They don't ask their partner anymore. They ask ChatGPT, or if I've got a medical problem, they're asking ChatGPT. They're not talking to their doctor. So I think in terms of general relationships and conversations, I think we're at a point where the future could be that we have less of them. And those who actually have more of them will actually be far better, far rounded people. We can't embrace technology too much because at the end of the day, humans need human connection. And whether that's in person, whether that's going for a walk in the forest with someone, or whether it's sitting down having a coffee with someone, or just picking up the telephone and talking to someone, if we recognize that we can do something about it, and it's not actually cost prohibitive, and it's socially good for us, that more people will do it. But it's going to require leadership from people, and hopefully I can be one of those people, is to bring profile to this issue that to break loneliness, we have to make more of an effort to be more human.
I completely concur with that concept because it's something I've been conscious of through my interactions on social media, my digital footprint. I've always considered myself a generous and kind person, but I'm actually thinking about it a lot more and being intentional because I'm surrounding myself now with a group of people virtually and, you know, through communication like on the phone, which I love. I love talking to people and listening to their voice or even Zooming because at least you can see a facial expression. And I had this discussion recently with Susie Butts following my connection to her through Call 4. And we talked about social media being removed for a component of under 16s in society here. And when you think about the virtual disconnect for them is real, because for some of them, they're the only relationships they may have formed in their lives, especially those minority groups. So that AI component, that online component, we need to totally rethink about what's safe, what's inclusive, and how we can utilize all communication platforms to feel connected. What does that mean to you?
To me, it means that my job is even larger and is going to require an even greater number of people to become part of the movement of people who actually genuinely care. I think it's interesting what you just said, particularly around the fact that over the last 12 or 18 months, both you and I have been involved in this podcast, but we're also involved in other projects around social issues, that I think we're becoming more socially aware because we're engaged in them. And the disconnect that people have of being in a digital world is that they are not socially aware. They don't know how to have conversations. They don't know how to give before receiving. They don't know how to contribute without an expectation of receiving. And I think some of those issues are fundamental to the way that we're raised in our families. Some families are very good at educating children about contributing to society before taking from society. In today's modern world, we don't necessarily live with our mother and father as much as we used to when we're young, divorced families, et cetera, new boyfriends, new girlfriends in the family, whatever's going on for mum and dad. I'm not actually sure that we're learning the skills as young people. And if we're not learning the skills, then we move on to the phone because, hey, that's my conversation piece. It'll talk to me. It'll give me the answers to life. And so I disconnect from mum and dad or granny and grandpa. And so I'm not exposed to those social interactions. I think because you and I are now in this circle of even greater in-depth conversation with people about these social issues, it's resonating even more with us. And I think I certainly are finding a greater, I wouldn't say inner peace, but I suppose I'm enjoying my conversations more with people because I'm actually having more of them and they're more hearty conversations too.
So we are actually coming up all over the world into one of the most social times of the year, Christmas and New Year's. However, for some people, it can be the most isolating, most lonely time for those who've lost family, been abandoned by friends, or just somehow gotten themselves so deep into loneliness, which is different to being alone, that they can't dig their way out. So what would you advise people to think about over this period and how they might be able to make a difference in someone's life, even if it's an elderly neighbour or a new young couple that have moved in down the street?
I think if you're conscious of the issue, I think you need to go next door, or you need to, for example, I've got a very good friend who every Tuesday, he's 86, I take him out of the retirement home where he's living, he comes and spends a day with me. Now on Christmas Day, he'll be with his granddaughter, so that'll be great. But I already know that there are a number of people in his home where he lives with about 80 other people, that there are already people in there. They won't have anyone on Christmas Day. They won't see anybody. Some of them don't have family. That's obviously a challenge because they've passed away, but some do have family and the family aren't even interested in being with them because, you know, I'll have to go and get mum and she can't feed herself and she can't walk properly. So therefore I don't want to have her out around everybody else for Christmas Day or whatever. So I think it's actually being conscious and actually understanding that we too will one day end up in a position, particularly with the elderly, that we will one day get old. And we'd like to think that our contribution to looking after other people is going to come back to us. But I think we just need to be aware. We've got an old lady who lives next door to us. We'll make sure that she's part of our Christmas Day. We're like that. We're those sorts of people. But I think if more people around the world can just recognize, just spend 5 minutes, talk to someone you haven't spoken to for a while, go and see the next door neighbor, go and see someone at an elderly retirement village or whatever, just make the effort. We can't say today that we're oblivious to the issue because the issue is spoken about so widely now around the world. And there's mental health counselors who talk about loneliness all the time. So there are hundreds of thousands of counselors around the world now who are all talking about loneliness as part of their profession. Sooner or later, it comes back to us. We actually have to be aware of this issue and we actually have to be accountable and do something about it ourselves. So reach out, talk to someone, make the phone call, make the effort.
We spoke with Angela Campbell in New Zealand. She is a loneliness expert who works on connection, which is the opposite of being lonely. And that word took me back to a couple of things you've said in this conversation. One, children disconnecting from their parents and searching online. And two, the fact that we aren't really teaching our children how to have conversations with people they don't know or how to interact with people in person or even on the phone. So that alone is a bit alarming, because those connections need to be fostered from early childhood. And we live in a society now where we're so disconnected because we have so much pressure on us to perform, to have a job, to have the house, to have the things. And we live these separate lives. I'm hoping that somewhere along the line we can address this and bring it back to center. What do you think the first step looks like in relation to reconnecting with the people who live with us in our very homes or in our families, let alone friends?
Well, we have a mutual friend, Neil Milton, who runs a really important project called the Table Talk Project. And we have a rule in our house, we don't have phones at our table when we eat. So I think first and foremost, we can decide as a family to disconnect from digital technology, turn the TV off, and as I like to say, throw a hand grenade in the conversation around the dinner table and get people to talk about the issue. And it could be sport, could be politics, could be anything. Could just be, you know, what did you do today? Or did you see an interesting client or whatever it might be? Those of us who understand need to share the value of the conversations we have with our friends and family members. And so in my family, I've got four siblings. Two of them have elderly children. One of them has good conversations around the dinner table. The other family doesn't have any conversations around the dinner table. They don't eat together at all. And so it's interesting when two of those three children from that family that don't eat together come to our place. It's a whole different world because, again, there's no phone at our dinner table. And these children, my nephews, are forced to join the conversation around the table. And sometimes it's interesting hearing what they've got to say, or they listen to other people's opinions. And so I think if we do it, you do it. We talk to other families about, hey, have you ever thought this idea? Or maybe share Neil's website with them. Just sharing the value. You know, we had a great conversation at dinner the other night. We threw in this hand grenade and this was the subject and this is what we got out of it. You go, maybe you should have a few conversations occasionally. You know, we can influence our friends. And I think peer-to-peer is the way that we can start to do this. Because again, like you said, we have respectful relationships and conversations. If we have those conversations and we can say to other people, you too can have them without losing your shirt, peer-to-peer is the way it's got to be. I see this as a huge opportunity for parents to actually play a really more significant role in society. And I think that's one of the challenging places that we are now as a society, is that we don't have enough parental or grandparent guidance or Uncle Jim or Auntie Jenny's guidance. I don't think the family unit's as strong as it used to be. And I don't think the conversations are had, and I'd like to see stronger families, I think.
One thing I love to focus on with family particularly, or even some close friends, is to focus on what we're grateful for. So that's how I'd like to wrap this one up this year, of what we can do to come together, to gather and be grateful this Christmas. What message would you like to leave people with?
I think I would like to leave people with a message that you don't know how much you'll miss people until they're gone. And you've now got an opportunity and an awareness to connect with those people while they're here with you. So pick up the phone, go and see someone, make the effort, have the conversation now, because one day you won't be able to have it.
Thank you, Charles. It's been a pleasure, as always, to wrap things up at the end of this big year. It's been a massive year. It's been a year of challenge, transition for so many people I know. And I'm grateful that people like you are actually taking action to rectify some of the bigger problems we're seeing in society, genuinely, in a heartfelt way. So gratitude for you. And if anyone else out there would like to join us, they can go to callfor.org.
Absolutely. Join the group of people making change in this space.
It's a deliberate and intentional act, and it's definitely a way we can finish 2025 with kindness. And I'm looking forward to a better 2026, Charles.
Indeed. And I want more of you in my life in 2026, Kim. So thanks for being part of 2025. It's been great.
As we close out this year, I want to thank Charles Alder, founder of the Call For campaign, for creating a platform that reminds us that reaching out can save lives. As we move into what is often the most social and for many the loneliest time of the year, Call For offers a gentle invitation. Slow down, pick up the phone, make time for each other. Because compassion, when practiced daily, has the power to ripple out far beyond a single call. Thank you for listening to Call For to Connect throughout 2025. May the year ahead be filled with more kindness, more courage, and more moments of genuine human connection. I'm Kim Clyden. Until next year, keep connecting.